This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand.
Ladies, don't let anybody tell you you are ever past your prime.
That's Michelle Yeoh, who at age 60 won the Best Actress Prize for Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Lily Tomlin is living those words, and she's a lot older. She's 83. She's won an Emmy, a Grammy, a Tony, and has yet to win an Oscar, but maybe there's still time. Lily Tomlin's professional story begins in 1969 in comedy when she did characters on the TV show Laugh-In'.
One rainy dingy. Gracious hello. Is this General Motors? Hi, General. How's everything going again? Tell me, how's Mrs. Motors?
And in 1975, she was cast in her first serious role in Robert Altman's Nashville. And, of course, there was a little movie called 9 to 5.
I'm a murderer.
No, you're not.
I'm a murderess.
Violet, you're nothing until proven guilty.
She starred alongside Jane Fonda then and more recently in the hit Netflix comedy series Grace and Frankie. Lily Tomlin is still working with Jane Fonda in two movies this year, 80 for Brady and Moving On, in which they play two college friends who reunite at a funeral and decide to exact revenge on their dead friend's husband.
A devoted wife and mother, a doting grandmother. Joyce was a wonderful woman.
Joyce. This is Claire, one of Joyce's oldest friends. They were at college together. Claire.
Howard. I'm going to kill you. Now that she's gone, I'm going to do it this weekend.
Lily Tomlin joins me now. Welcome to Press Play.
Thank you, Madeline.
You were supposed to join us with Jane Fonda, but she, I guess, had a slight accident, but she's okay, right?
Yeah, she's fine.
Okay, good, good. So let's talk about the two of you, because you are in this movie together. You play friends, or I guess newly reacquainted friends. Describe your relationship.
Well, we're two old college mates who are reunited at a third friend's funeral 45 years later. And we plot to even the score on an injustice we've been a witness to and participant.
Right. Sort of a Me Too moment that happened many decades ago.
Right.
I understand this movie was written for you. Is that correct?
Yeah. Those things do happen.
How did that work? And why this particular plot involving you?
Well, I'd done two movies with Paul Weitz. I'd done Admission. And I'd done Grandma. Mm-hmm. And so I said to Jane one day on the set of Grace and Frankie, I said, I'm going to call Paul and ask him to write a movie for us. He called and he said, I've got an idea. It just starts out, you know, with one character saying to another, I'm going to kill you this weekend.
Yeah, it's a good attention grabber. And did you work with him on the storyline, on the plot?
No.
On the characters?
No, not really.
So he wrote it, presented it to you, and you were like, yeah, okay, I'm in.
Yeah, that's right. No, I laughed at stuff. I thought it was terribly funny. And my character was, very fairly glib and witty, had something, always something sassy to say about everything.
Yeah. And your character is a lesbian. She's out and proud. Is this the first character you've played who's been out?
No. I played a lesbian poet in Grandma.
Ah, oh, yeah, right.
And in The Search, one of the characters, play my partner, wrote Jane Wagner, The Search for Signs of Intelligent. This is in a theater piece. The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe. Mm-hmm. One of the characters is Edie. She's a lesbian, and she's in a relationship with Pam, and they have a child, Ivan, who is a prodigy.
That was a while ago, right?
Say 83 or 85 that was
on Broadway. So how revolutionary was that to have those characters in the early 80s on Broadway?
Well, I don't think it was terribly revolutionary. Maybe it was because they used a turkey baster to impregnate Pam. That was new and interesting for the audience to hear.
But you didn't have openly gay characters that often.
No, not that often. You have to have a good part, mm-hmm. a meaningful part.
And that was written by your partner, Jane Wagner, who you've been with for more than 50 years?
I guess 53 or 54 years.
And I should say wife, not partner.
We're not keen on wife, although that's what a lot of people, you know, it's too heteronormative.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
You don't want to imitate. We want the gay community to come up with better ideas than just to copy the heterosexual community. It's Jane is a writer, and that's the main thing she is. She is a writer.
And she's written a lot for you. So you are also creative partners. And how did she help you in your career? How did she help you with certain roles and projects?
Well, she just might write a good, you know, a better idea or some great lines or any number of things. I mean, she's a very talented writer, totally embraces the humanity. So she writes lines that have, they're comedic or they're funny, they're thoughtful, and so that's how she would always do something wonderful.
Hmm.
I mean, she would write a script for Edith Ann. When we animated Edith Ann for a while, and she wrote those scripts.
And this is a character, if people aren't familiar, that you created for Laugh-In back in the late 1960s.
My old dog Buster, he don't smell good, and I have to give him a bath, but he don't like baths. So, because he don't like to be really clean. So when I washed him yesterday, I used 1 cup of bubble bath and 2 cups of dirt.
Oh my gosh. Describe that character, how you came up with her.
I wanted to do a young child. I introduced the telephone operator when I first went on. Mm-hmm. And she was a huge hit. Ernestine was just caught on like that. It was unbelievable.
Hmm.
And so then I kept trying to talk them into doing Edith Ann. And the writers didn't. They said she was bratty and she was this and she was that. And they just showed a little interest in her. So I said, just get me a big cardboard box, you know, like a refrigerator box. And she'll stick her head out. And then we won't have to have any size relationship. So they humored me and they let me do that for a couple of weeks. And she caught on unbelievably. Hmm. And I went out in the hallway one day and our show carpenter was building her rocking chair. I knew she found a place a home on the show.
Her own gigantic chair.
Yeah. I had that chair in my house. I always kept a lot of stuff from different productions and things. It's good way to furnish your pad.
What did you take from Nashville?
I don't know if I'd had enough sense to start collecting. That was the first movie I ever did. I kept some of the clothes.
So this is 1975 Nashville, and you play a gospel singer. And how did you get that role?
Well, Louise Fletcher was supposed to do that role. She's died now.
Oh, Nurse Ratched from...
Nurse Ratched, right. She won the Oscar that year.
Yeah.
And her husband was a producer, and he had worked with Bob Altman on Thieves Like Us, which is a wonderful movie. Shelley Duvall is just dropped dead beautiful in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't find out about Louise for a long time. Bob just called me up one day. We had the same agent. He said, I want you to come down to Nashville and do a part in Nashville. And he gave me Louise's part. But of course, I had no idea that that was the case until the night of the Oscars. Louise was signing to her family, sign language. Uh-huh. And I began to put two and two together.
Because your kids in the movie are deaf.
And I studied sign language every day for 3 months. This girl would come to my door, knock on the door at like 8 a.m. And I just have to drag myself out and try to sign stuff. No matter what I did, I never got very good at it, but I could memorize certain passages. So I memorized long conversations with my son.
But this was your first dramatic role. And were you nervous to take a dramatic role after all the comedy?
No, I never saw any difference between comedy or drama.
Oh, that's interesting.
And depending on the style of the vehicle, you know, you can play it broader or less broad. So no, I never had any problem with that. And I don't understand why people carry on about it so much.
Yeah.
I don't think they do so much anymore, but.
Right. People aren't as siloed perhaps as they were in the past. So the other Jane in your life, Jane Fonda, you worked with in 9 to 5, and you've been working with her, well, in a few projects since then, especially most notably the TV show that you just wrapped, Grace and Frankie. I just want to say it's just really beautiful to see two women with such a longstanding friendship, and which seems, at least when I watch you in interviews, genuine, warm, and heartfelt.
That's mostly due to me. I exude that heart warmth, that warmth of heart, and
have you been friends ever since 9 to 5, or did it kind of wane and come back?
No, we knew each other, you know, very well, but we were totally up for the series. I mean, my agent called me and said, "Are you and Jane Fonda looking for something to do together on television?" I said, "Well, I think we are now," and so that was that. It was just so natural.
Yeah,
Jane is so busy doing climate change now, and I'm so grateful for her that she is. Somehow, I was at her house when she decided to go to D.C., and she said, "Well, I'm going to move to D.C. for a year," and I said, "Yeah." And she said, "I've got to call into Ted Sarandos, asking him to put off Grace and Frankie for a year."
So that she could do some activism?
Yeah, so she could go and establish Fire Drill Fridays and all the stuff she's doing for climate change. And when she said, I called Ted Sarandos and asked him if we could delay Grace and Frankie for a year, I didn't laugh, but I said, "Well, good luck with that." Sure. I thought, well, if anybody could talk Ted Sarandos into it, it's probably Jane. Yeah. But of course, she didn't talk him into it because here, Grace and Frankie was one of the hit shows on Netflix.
Yeah.
So, and then COVID hit. And so she had 4 months at least she could move to DC, and she did that. And, you know, she's been so inspired by Greta Thunberg. She just had to do something.
Does she try to get you involved in her political activism? Oh.
Just peripherally, you know, she got everybody involved. I mean, everybody went to D.C. and protested and got arrested. And that's inevitable with Jane.
Yeah.
Jane, here's the most beautiful thing Jane said. She said this years ago. Someone said to her, "Well, aren't you just being used by such and such a group?" Or, you know, it's kind of a little backward dig. And she said, "Everybody's being used by someone. What better thing than to be used by good people for good things."
That's true.
You have to love her for it.
Yeah.
Just in general.
Do you think it's a big deal that it appears that older women are getting more recognition and more roles in Hollywood these days?
Yeah, sure. It's much, much better. I mean, it's not hugely better, but it's much better. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember when I had an agent who said to me, I wanted to be seen for a certain part. And he said, and I said, "Well, so-and-so's being seen for it." And he said, "Yeah, but she's 10 years younger than you." And I, "Well, she doesn't look it." I just was incensed because he said that.
Yeah. Was there a period where in your career where that was a big problem and you couldn't get the roles that you wanted?
No, I never wanted very many roles. I much rather go out and do my own act if I couldn't get a part that I wanted or that I thought or to work with an artist that I thought was really gifted.
Yeah.
They used to write parts for women that would be considered, you know, aged now. I mean, from 40, 50 years ago, an older woman would be 55, 60 at least. And they used to put a wig hat on your head and a, you know, an exercise suit and great big old tennies. And you'd be the butt of the jokes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, good natured and all that stuff. Well, you pretty soon, no woman, that's not the story of all women at all. And even if it were, they don't deserve to be made the butt of the joke.
Right. Also sexless, right? When you reach a certain age, you're not supposed to
absolutely
be
sexless,
a sexual being. Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Well, Jane Fonda in this movie has a sex scene. You don't see it, but it's implied.
Oh. Well, yeah, but she had a couple of them in Grace and Frankie.
Yeah.
Frankie was, she just had a yurt put out on the patio and carry on.
So what are your next projects?
I don't have any for the moment. I'll come up with something.
I'm sure you will. Well, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, KCRW.
Lily Tomlin, starring in the new movie, Moving On, which is in theaters tomorrow. We will talk about who may be on the shortlist to replace Gustavo Dudamel as the next conductor of the LA Philharmonic. That conversation with Alex Ross of The New Yorker is next on Press Play.